Okay, let's go ahead and get started. We are back on our foundations class this morning. Once again, let's go ahead and dive into our the method in our madness, which has been to outline for us over a period of four semesters the Christ Pres way. What is distinctive about how we do things, how we look at things? And this third semester of the series has been about what it means for us to function as a community, as a body. We talked about that during the sermon this morning, about how God is building this institution, this gathering of people. And we've also found that there are dynamics that take place within the theological idea of the church that need their own bearing out, right? We've talked about marriage as a foundational relationship within that dynamic. We've talked about parenting as a massive issue in the midst of that. And these last 4 weeks of the series, we got one more next week, we're looking at what it means for us to learn to get along and how challenging that can be. And we're looking at it through the lens of some very helpful common grace that has come in through the social, scientific, psychological world called systems theory, which, again, don't let that throw you off. It's simply a way of describing what it means for us to interact. So what I'd like to do, I don't know how well this is going to appear. Oh, you can see it just fine. Okay. All right, so this graphic I'm really excited about because it outlines for us how different Christian denominations see each other. All right? This one's really fun. In the normal exercise, we do this where you just let you stare at it for about 3 minutes and you wait for the giggles to start because it's really funny. Okay, but here's how it works. Like, first of all, you look on the left-hand side, and these are Catholics. How do Catholics see Catholic people? Well, there's a picture of the Pope. How do Catholics seen by mainline liberals? Well, Catholics see the mainline liberals like they hate unborn children. It's a graphic sort of thing. How do Catholics see reformed people? Well, they see Calvin screaming. Huh, get it? Calvin and Hobbes? Trust me, it's got many layers. Many layers, this stuff. Okay, so let's see. How do liberals see Catholics? Well, you know, big giant families, right? with 14 children. Thank you. Karen's starting to get it right now. How do liberals see liberals? Well, they see themselves as Mother Teresa, because they're the only ones really helping people, right? How do liberals see the reformed? Oh, people that are in a fight, in an argument. How do liberals see evangelicals? Well, basically the Republican Party. That's the George Bush thing. He was president about 20 years ago, for those of you that don't know that. How do liberals see charismatics? Look at the snake handling picture. See there? All right, so let's do the Reformed. How do the Reformed see Catholics? Ooh, there's the golden calf. Okay, you think that was funny. How do Reformed people see mainline liberals? As Marxists. That's Karl Marx. How do the Reformed people see themselves? Look at that perfect family. Right? How do Reformed people see evangelicals? Oh, those little babies. If only they grew up and understood. Right? How do Reformed people see charismatics? Well, people who belong in insane asylums. Right? That's the crazy person. I didn't say it was complimentary. I'm just saying that's what it is. Evangelicals see Catholics as if they're all Mexicans. It's horribly racist. I told you. Evangelicals see mainline liberals as if they're the Democratic Party, represented by Obama. Evangelicals see the Reformed as drunken slobs. Evangelicals see evangelicals as one who are committed to the Bible, right? Evangelicals see charismatics as if they're, I don't even know what that is, just the people kind of dancing around in church maybe, I don't know. Charismatics see Catholics like that. Charismatics see mainline liberals as if they're, you know, Darwinian. Charismatics see the Reformed as robots, the frozen chosen, right? Charismatics see the evangelicals like it's old time gospel hour with the sweet old lady playing the organ. And of course they see themselves in the posture of upward lifted hands in worship. All right, so here's my questions for you. How accurate are the impressions of, let's talk about us, because we're obviously that middle section. Presbyterian and Reformed is sort of how we describe ourselves. So do you think that's fair about what other people think about Reformed people? Of how they care, not is their caricature fair, but do you think that's actually how they actually see us? I think it's kind of shockingly accurate, right? So let me ask you a question. What does something like this reveal to you? And it's appropriate to giggle, like it's supposed to be funny. What do you mean by that? We compare. We make judgments about each other, absolutely. What else? How about this question? How much weight should we give to other people's perspectives about us? A little? A lot?
Depends on the other person.
Yes, it depends on the other person. And which factors would you say? Because here's the question. Are the theological differences between those five traditions represented in that graphic, are the differences in them kind of minimal? They're not. They're fairly substantive. At least we would say as much. Hence the arguing people for the by the liberals. Yeah, I mean, we feel like those things are actually rather substantive, our disagreements, right? But so what does that mean, though, about the way in which I'm seen? In other words, the question becomes, how different are the versions of the visions that I have of myself versus the way in which other people see me? That's what the graphic is trying to reveal to us. What is the difference between the ways in which I see myself and visualize myself, understand and comprehend myself, versus the way other people look and see me? That's the question. Because we employ invariably lots of different ways to sort of understand our differences with each other. We say things like, well, it's either right or wrong, Les. It's right or wrong. You're either right or you're either in the right camp or you're in the wrong camp. We might actually have a reaction to it that would say, well, we don't need to listen to anybody. We need to be who we are. That has nothing. You got to be your own person. Stop listening to other people's opinions. Some of you might actually look and be like, well, those people who disagree with me, those are just the troublemakers. They have a problem. That's my problem, and I'm willing to take that on head to head, right? So the question is, what are the ways in which typically, when we deal with differences that are not quite as wide and far-reaching as these theological differences that are displayed up here, what are the ways in which you and I try to negotiate the differences between us as people? How do I learn to figure out that you come with a whole different set of emotional, psychological, and historical baggage that I don't have? How do I navigate that? How do I figure out my way in the midst of you and you're different? How do I do that? Well, we believe that there's unhealthy ways of doing this, right? You can start with suspicion of people. You might have a posture in life that's just kind of like, I don't know. I told you my dad's joke that he used to always say. It was like, son, everybody's crazy except for you and me, and I'm not too sure about you. Suspicion, right? And fear of other people. We also look for aggressive advocation. Well, this is where strength of character comes in, Les. I mean, if you're going to be all wishy-washy and everything about what you believe, I mean, I guess that's one way to do it, but no, I learned very early on that if you want it, you got to go after it. It's aggressive, right? We might also say that there's a way of saying, of ignoring our deepest needs under the surface of our lives. This is an unhealthy way. In other words, not realizing that a lot of what I've built up in the emotional energy of this difficult conversation or this difficult experience I'm in with this person is due a lot to the way that I see things. I'm bringing in my own baggage. I got all my own set of triggers that are all my own. Can't ignore those, right? What other ways? Have a conversation with someone who is not directly involved but knows the parties. In other words, this is great. Like, if you and I have a problem, one of the easiest ways to deal with it is just to go to somebody else and tell them about the problem. And doesn't that make everything better? No, it doesn't make anything better. That was a trick question. But remember that, because that's a very important concept right there that we're going to come to either this week or next week. Finally, we can just look and say, you know what? I don't need to assert my opinion less. I just try to keep my head down. When I walk into a situation like that, I just, and I withdraw from it, and I just disappear from the conversation. Because that's conflict, and I don't do conflict. But here's the deal. We're trying to negotiate our differences with each other, and there's all kinds of ways that are very instinctive to us. But we want to ask the question this morning, but how do I become someone who is mature in a church context? And how do I understand maturity? Most of us, when we hear that term, kind of default to what, you know, your teenage daughter says to your preteen son, like, you are so immature, right? What does he mean by that? Who knows what she means by that? We have no idea. But I want to try to wrap my mind around an understanding of maturity that is based in figuring out exactly what our what's going on in these emotional processes. Remember that we've said that there is no way to avoid a church full of people who are going through emotional processes. Sometimes they're doing that in isolation because they've got a struggle in their marriage. Maybe they got a struggle at their job. But sometimes they surface when it's intra-church conflict or difficulties, and someone is going through an emotional process. That is, I'm feeling something, and the definition of that feeling is anxiety. There was something I had, a familiarity, a safety, and now it's gone. And when I have that, I feel anxious. And when I get anxious, I'm in an emotional process. How do I deal with that? Well, what systems theory is trying to give us language to do is to begin, like we said a couple weeks ago, to acknowledge what it is that we are bringing to the table first. How am I approaching the situation, right? What is it? How can I manage my own anxiety so that I'm successfully navigating life in a church? And by the way, some of you who own businesses or work in clubs or whatever else, the dynamic works the same, I promise you. Now, we're going to show a video next week that'll really bring that home to you. But the question I want to ask this morning is, what are the benchmarks for what you and I would call maturity when we're dealing with other people's issues? And what we want to identify this morning are two keys to navigating these differences in the church as they arise. Number one, we want to talk about deepening our dialogue. And number two, I want to put a label on what we mean by being mature, okay? So let's take that first one. This guy right here is deepening his dialogue. Do you see him? He's so earnest in that conversation. Okay, never mind. I'm very highly invested in the pictures that I find in this. I hope y'all have understood that from this semester, okay? Okay, so deepening dialogue happens when people feel like their perspectives are being heard. This is a huge point that people will make the difference in, is that very rarely do you have someone who needs to have their way all the time. It's called a sociopath, okay? People that are operating on a measurable level of health don't always want to win the argument and have their way all the time. What they want to feel is that they are valued in the midst of the conversation. Is there a way, is there a means by which I can allow this person to know that they're being heard, that they're being listened to? Because that being listened to is going to communicate value. And that's what we would call a safe environment. A safe environment is not one where people have to have their way. Sometimes it means being open to change and communicating that openness to the rest of the team as a way of trying to promote more health, okay? And so what we talked about a couple weeks ago is absolutely vital here, because I have to learn to bring genuine humility to the conversation. In other words, the first thing that I've got to embrace, and in our world it's getting harder and harder, is that I have to own my own stuff before I walk into this conversation. And acknowledge the fact that I am not omniscient. Even when it is certifiably true that I have infinitely more experience with this conversation than you do. Almost especially in those circumstances, do we have to go out of our way to be humble enough to say, but you know what, I can still learn. That's a healthy person that will deepen dialogue as they do. Okay? The Apostle Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 8:2, I love this. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. That's a great way to put that, right? If you imagine that you know something, you don't know what you really need to know, which is the admission that I don't know everything. So humility with one's opinions, with one's answers, it demonstrates an openness to others' opinions and solutions, which will deepen the collaborative process and helps you get through all of these emotional processes people are going through, okay? So my last question is this, okay, so what are the ways in which we can demonstrate that we're deepening dialogue with our fellow church members? Are there substantive ways to do so? Well, I think there are. We can identify some best practices. Obviously, like we've just said, we can learn to listen more. That's a great judge. Who preoccupied most of the conversation during that conversation? Did I talk or did they talk more? That's a great thing, just to go on the sheer time. Yes, ask questions, which means you're simply doing healthy inquiry. How good am I at learning to ask questions that really draw people out and don't shut conversation down? You ever had the conversation ender, sort of a conversation with people? You know, it's kind of like, man, I've just really been wrestling with this whole question of this particular policy that our organization just implemented. And someone looks at you and goes, well, you know, it's just a sin, don't you? Well, okay, good to talk to you. Glad to have this conversation. And again, but here's the deal. It might be a sin. In other words, systems theory is not necessarily trying to ignore the fact that there are actual problems and actual truth and error that are out there. It's not ignoring that at all. It's simply saying, in order for us to continue to have a community with our differences, even those differences that might end up in our ultimate separation. Systems theory is not coming along and saying that you should never, ever, ever think to yourself, I need to find a different church to go to. That is not the case. The question is, in my exit, can I do it without leaving a scorched earth behind me? Which so often results in what goes on in churches. That's the question. All right, let's look at some other best practices. A willingness to change or adjust my perspective, sometimes that's just a matter of saying it. Become process-oriented and not outcome-oriented. What that means is saying, you know what, this is going to take time. We can actually walk with each other through this. We're going to be okay taking our time through this, rather than saying, we just got to get to the end. I know the answer to this. I know where we're supposed to go. I know you do. Good for you. But are you willing to walk with someone so that they can come to your conclusion over time? Good wisdom. Suspending judgment long enough to truly consider other points of view. You know what? I don't exactly really fully grasp what you're trying to talk about, but I tell you what, I promise I'm going to think about it. And if I've got questions for you, I'm going to come back for you and see if I can figure out what you're saying. Completely disarms the conversation. Recognize that there are losses and gains associated with any decision, and that your view may not be accepted, even when you're fully convinced that your view is correct. Just the mere ownership of that question deflates a lot of the anxiety. And then finally, recognize the roles and authority of those in the conversation, which means that there's different, in other words, people are in different places. Sometimes I'm having a conversation with someone who is engaged themselves in a role that I am not. And they have authority and responsibilities in their particular role that I do not. And I've got to interact with those in terms of what that particular authority is. That happens a lot with elders. It happens a lot with people that get placed in charge of things, right? This person's been designated for whatever reason to be in charge of this. There we go. So the point is we got to have things that are working in me that make these things possible. I'll be honest with you. Those are kind of idealistic. You think to yourself, I wish my boss was that way. We all kind of wish that. But the question is, how do I become that kind of person? And that brings me to the second point. We're not just talking about deepening dialogue, but we're also talking about becoming mature. Now, if you'll notice what that lady is doing in that drawing there, is she is drawing a circle around herself with a giant pencil, okay? Hence the graphic. Now, why is she doing that? Well, because there are numerous people around her that are actually clamoring and talking with her about things. And so what we're trying to do is to become familiar with a term, and I don't want this to throw you off, but we need to become familiar with a term that's very often used in systems theory. It's the word differentiation. Now, don't let big words throw you off. What's the root word of differentiation? Different, okay? Something that's different. We know what that word means, and that's really all it does mean. The process of differentiation, according to systems theorists, is you getting okay with the fact that you are different. I don't mean different like weird. That may be the case. We will make no judgments about anybody in the room, myself included. I just mean different from this other person. You came from a different family of origin. You had different experiences. You drew different conclusions. You had different levels of education. We all had different. But the question is, can I be okay with that? And so learning to be differentiated is a massive struggle in what we're referring to. There's a book called The Leader's Journey that gives what I think is one of the best definitions. It's a little bit long, but it's up there so you can all read it with me here. So he says, differentiation deals with the effort to define oneself, to control myself, to become a more responsible person, and then permit others to be themselves as well. Differentiation is the ability to remain connected in a relationship to significant people in our lives and yet not have our reactions and behavior determined by them. That was a key phrase. I should have italicized that. Stay connected to someone. In other words, being connected with someone means that you walk away thinking, that person actually knows what it's like to be me. That's the definition of connection, okay? But we have to do so in a way that means that our lives, our reactions and behavior are not determined by them. Okay? Someone else does something, and suddenly you go nuclear when that person does that. That is being poorly differentiated. Can another person's anxiety immediately affect your anxiety? If it does, that's a differentiation struggle. And by the way, differentiation is a journey to be traveled, not a destination to arrive. Okay, there's no like perfect level of differentiation where nothing bothers me about anybody. We're talking about the healthy ways to get through this. A leader who has the capacity to know and do the right thing understands him or herself apart from others, and so is able to achieve distance from a situation and observe what's really going on without letting personal reactivity or anxiety get in the way. That's a leader. Okay? Personal reactivity and anxiety. Those are the two boogeymen right there. Personal reactivity, meaning I'm not thinking about what I'm going to say, I'm just going to say it. It's about most of the times you've ever gotten in trouble with things like that. But it's a lack of differentiation because someone said something that immediately triggered me and I was not differentiated myself to be able to see it. And therefore, I owned their anxiety. And guess what? I'm no longer an absorber. I'm now a conduit. Because anxiety is going to come out someplace. Pain in your life is going to come out someplace. Who are you passing it along to? All right? I thought that was profound. Let's take another one. This guy named Ron Richardson. If I was going to recommend a book to you, there's a little book called Creating a Healthier Church that Ron Richardson wrote. It's a short little thing, wonderful illustrations. A lot of these quotes are from him. He says, keeping down the level of anxiety in the emotional system of the congregation, leaders, so it's why they do this primarily by managing their own anxiety, and then, secondarily, by staying in meaningful contact with other key players in the situation. Now think about this. He just said two things. On the one hand, the first process is to say, I've got to maintain my sense of individuality here and knowing who I am, that I'm different from this person, and therefore their anxiety is not about me. It's not about me. It's about them. But I can't get hijacked, but I've got to keep that separation. That's one thing. However, at the same time, I still have to make that person know that I'm still connected to them. Because it's very easy to be like, oh, I'm all in. The introverts are kind of like, differentiation. That's me, man. I don't want to see anybody, right? I just want to be at home with my book and tell in a Netflix show, and that's all I ever want to talk about. That's not what it's saying. Because retreat, you know, from a situation is itself passing along anxiety. You ever thought about that? You know, if you look and say, that person's a dangerous person, I don't want to see him again, that can itself create more anxiety. You can become a conduit that way as well. I'm not saying that there's not appropriate boundaries. We'll come to that in a little bit. I love this line. They do not tell others to be calm. They simply bring their own calmness to the situation. That's a big deal because I can't control you. I can't make you feel something that you don't feel right now. This is Bonnie Raitt. Everybody remember Bonnie Raitt? What did she tell us? I can't make you love me. Thank you. See the college student got that. I can't make you love me if you don't. You won't make your heart feel something that it won't. Here in the dark in these final hours, I'll feel the power, but you won't. That's the most heartbreaking song that she ever wrote. I think that's true. Anyway, let's do another one. This is Edwin Freeman. This is kind of the guru. Thomas Bowen was the guy who came up with the systems theory, sort of pioneered it. Edwin Freeman was the guy who took it to its next level in his book, A Failure of Nerve. It's kind of the Bible of the systems theory people because it's all this root stuff. But I love this quote here. He says, the universal problem for all partnerships, marital or otherwise. By the way, if you haven't noticed, this applies to your marriage like big time. Marital or otherwise was not getting closer. What? It was preserving self in a close relationship, something no one made of flesh and blood seems to do well. Friedman is Jewish, by the way. I kind of want to be like, you should have the answer to that. It's called total depravity. But I digress. In other words, we oftentimes think that, oh, if I could just be closer to that person, if we were just closer. Friedman's like, that's actually not the problem. The problem is you're too close. You're something called enmeshed, which means every time something happens to them, it happens to you. And Freeman's trying to say, no, I've got to make sure that I can distinguish myself and know my anxieties as different from your anxieties. He says, I eventually came to define my marriage counseling, no matter what the cultural mix, as trying to help people separate so that they wouldn't separate. I love that. To sort of look and say, I've got to be able to allow this person to have their differences, have me respect those differences, and care about them through it all. All right, so let's go back to our discussion here about differentiation. All those quotes. What we're looking for in most situations is what we would call a well-differentiated, non-anxious presence. I want to be somebody who has actually learned to be okay with the things that I am okay with in me, and not necessarily needing something from you that you are either unwilling or unable to give. And living in the midst of that while still doing whatever we can to stay connected, to work at listening long enough to see the world through your eyes, because you'll still respect me in that, and I'll respect you if we walk away connected. Differentiated but still connected. That's the trick in systems theory. Big old long quote here. Well-differentiated, non-anxious people then are able to resist being unduly entangled in the emotional processes at work in the system. You follow that? In other words, when you start to see, okay, someone's freaking out. I don't know if you've been back in the staff room, Les, but like it's going down right now. Okay, things went nuclear real quick. The question is, what does a leader do in the midst of that? You don't have to be like in a leadership position, but what does a person who is a leader do in the midst of that? Well, they come in and they say, I don't want to be unduly entangled in that, where I feel myself getting triggered, right? Can I bring the calm rather than telling people to remain calm? Maintain meaningful connection to the various individuals in the system. Did you catch that? Those are the two things that are kind of in contrast. I got to stay distinct from all of your crazy, right? And at the same time, let you know that I'm still here. Sometimes we're going to be distinct from the crazy. We think that's to disappear. No, that's another form of anxiety. It's still to engage, but in a healthy way. And finally, act according to their convictions in pursuit of important organizational goals. That's kind of a wooden way of saying standing by the truth, right? Standing by what we know to be right, where the organization ought to be going, what God has made us to be in the midst of this. Okay? All right, so last question here. I want to have some time for questions. Oh, good, good, good. What are the best practices then for becoming well-differentiated? Okay? How do these things happen in a healthy way? All right? First step is becoming aware of my internal emotions and what I'm feeling and how I'm being perceived. There is no more powerful, and I will say dangerous, question that you can ask someone who knows you and loves you well than to say, tell me how it is that I come across to other people. Because I know right now you're saying to yourself, I know the answer to that. I'm pleasant and delightful. That's how I come across to other people. Okay, but here's the crazy thing. Tim Keller has this funny illustration where he says, when was the last time you heard your voice recorded? I have to do this every week. Does anyone like the sound of their voice recorded? And as soon as someone plays it, they're like, oh, here you are. And they start playing it back. And what do you do? I don't sound anything like that. And what does everybody in the room say to you when you say that? That's exactly what you sound like. You don't even know what you sound like. How much less are you aware of how you come across to people? But you have to hear me. Someone with great wisdom. Remember how we were talking about Abraham's blessing a couple weeks ago? Someone with very tender hands in dealing with you needs to speak into your life and answer that question, because otherwise you're completely unaware that I didn't realize I'm just steamrolling people. Man, I really come across like I've got this all together. Is that what I wanted to communicate? Is that who I want to be? I've got to become aware of the fact that there's things working in me that I'm either overcompensating for or undercompensating for that are creating my personality. I'm with some of the Christian psychologists from the 1980s who used to say, your personality, this thing that you call just you, is actually a very sophisticated strategy that you deployed from the very earliest of ages in order to make life work for you. Not necessarily bad, not necessarily sinful, but that's what it is. And being mature is learning what those tendencies are. How did I get here? What were those things that happened to me? How did I process that thing? Here's a second one. What is the person I'm talking to feeling? And how do I perceive them? Now look, this gets harder and harder the longer you've known somebody. That's what marriage is about, right? Because you kind of feel like, look, I've been to the puppet show. I've seen the strings. I know what makes you tick. And we ain't going to do this again. How long does it take that? A year, 2 years before you're into that situation with your spouse? But that's why it's work to be a mature person who stops and is like, okay, they're going through something right now. Can I listen long enough to really appreciate that? Especially if they are not as differentiated themselves. In other words, they are reaching out for anybody that they could be more anxious to. Next, we're going to talk about we're going to list all the unhealthy ways that we deal with our lack of differentiation. It's a bit painful, but don't skip it next week. It's important. Am I doing what it takes to perceive how they are functioning? Here's one. Am I becoming emotionally hijacked? Watch out for fight or flight. Those are anxiety reactions. Fight means that I match their energy. Come on. I'm taking it right now if that's what you want to do. Flight is like, never mind, whoop, and you're gone. Hit the door. Both of those are reactions of anxiety, and that shows that I'm being emotionally hijacked. I'm becoming a conduit and not an absorber. Okay? Let's take another one. This is so fun. Am I able not to personalize their viewpoint or my point? In logic, we have this fallacy called the ad hominem. That's Latin for against the man. It's a fallacy. Someone comes along and says, well, I think we ought to do so-and-so and so-and-so. And someone else looks at you and is kind of like, you know, are we really going to listen to somebody who hadn't made a good decision in 20 years? Okay. you dealt with me as a person, not with my idea. And those two things should be distinct and separate. Well, your problem is you're just too young. You don't understand. You're just too young. We personalize people's viewpoints by sort of caricaturing them, committing ad hominem fallacies. Here's one. Recognize the value of differing opinions. Hey, you know what? Even if what they say makes me kind of cringe at first, you will grow by hearing it. 100%. I will grow by at least hearing that. But then also saying, can this person still walk away feeling like we're connected? Do they walk away from me with the idea that, like, yeah, Les understands, he sees the world through my eyes. He knows how I process. Even while maintaining a different opinion. Because if you're hearing yourself saying, this just sounds like wishy-washiness. No, it's not. It's the way in which healthy people disagree well. And oftentimes we're bringing our dishealth into all of this, and the language of differentiation is just simply trying to help us identify that. Finally, big question. Can I stay connected and still not get my way? Now, again, I hope you don't hear me saying that means it's never legitimate that you might say, I've been a part of this church, I've been a part of this body, but you know what? I'm not sure it's time for, my time here has come to an end. Do I never say that? That's not what it's saying at all. But it's saying that if I'm going to make that transition, I'm doing so in a way that people look and feel more connected to me afterwards, rather than the scorched earth that we oftentimes cause. Okay? All right. Oh, sorry, I'm going to give this last quote. This is also from Friedman. Madness cannot be judged from people's ideas or their values, but rather from 1, the extent to which they interfere in other people's relationships, 2, the degree to which they will constantly try to will others to change, and 3, their inability to continue relationship with people who disagree with them. I'm going to read that again. I should have put this on the board because this is really good. Doggone it. Madness, in other words, true problems, can be judged not by people's ideas and values, but 3 issues. 1, the extent to which they interfere in other people's relationships. Interfering, jumping in, is this really my fight? Is this my fight? Is this about me? 2, the degree to which they constantly try to will others to change. That's the systems theorist eye roll. If I could just get them to change. And this seems like you're never going to do that. It's not your role. You can't do that. Your job is actually to be a well-differentiated presence in the midst of that. And then finally, to continue a relationship with people who disagree with you. Got any relationships with people who disagree with you? That challenges me, right? All right, so differentiation. Questions and thoughts. We have a good 5 minutes before we have to start to vote with our congregational meeting here. Any clarifications? I wish we had a better word than differentiate. That's why I'm trying to lean on mature. because it's a little better word, I think. I appreciate it. Yeah, I agree. Again, remember, a system can be any two individuals, right? It can be your marriage. It can be your family. I hope you're looking back even at your own family conflicts and being like, oh, now I see. Yeah. Right. Hmm. Dang it, I might be inflexible. Yeah. Like I said, it takes a lot of bravery to venture into the question of, like, do I really want to see me through other people's eyes? The other part that makes a lot of this difficult is, with my family, there's a sense of constancy just because of space to some degree. But a lot of times in organizations like churches or even work relationships, one of the difficulties is, in the absence of any direct expression of connection, it's this amazing mainstay of human experience. We'll almost always assume the worst about someone else's motives towards me. You follow me on that one? Like, if I don't get a sense of connection to you, and there's some sort of distance, the inertia that's pulling that other person's opinion of you will always go to the worst possible explanation. That's just the deal. No one from the church called me when I lost my loved one. I don't understand why they hate me. Do you see the jump there? Right? Because there was no connection, someone will assume. When the truth is, sometimes, like, you ready for this? Mistakes happen. And they just happen. But all of a sudden, I went into an emotional process. How different would it be in that moment to look and say, why is this bothering me? Why is this bothering me? Well, you know, maybe it's because I lost this loved one. And I'm going through an emotional process over here myself. And yeah, that really would have been very helpful had I gotten a call from one of my friends in my small group. And I didn't. And I'm really disappointed about that. And I kind of want to bring that up next time, but I don't want to yell at him. How do I do that? Suddenly we're having a much better conversation, right? Then 6 months later, when you've already joined another church, someone would be like, hey, what's going on? I haven't seen you in a while. What's doing? Well, you know, so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And I was never coming back there again. Oh, okay. Gray. Yeah, that's a great question. So if I'm sitting in the midst of my small group, you can look in. So part of what the systems theorists will talk about is making sure that I'm always using personal identifiers. In other words, I don't bring an accusation, I bring a problem. We talked about this when we talked about the marriage counseling. I'm bringing a problem. Say, you know, y'all, I'm kind of sitting here, and I had a reaction to something when I lost my loved one. That I really felt like I needed somebody, and I'm worried about the way it's made me feel, and I just want to talk that out with y'all. Whether y'all feel like that's kind of ridiculous. Now, 9 times out of 10, you'll have a group of people who'll be like, "I didn't know what happened. We didn't realize." It will almost never be what it is that I projected on that group, which is utter indifference. Right? That's just not the case. But again, that's the inertia that pulls other people to believe the worst about me is in you as well. To the people that you don't feel connected to also. And a lot of times in large organizations, it is very hard to stay connected like that. You just can't. Which is why I think everybody's, which is why the reason we're having these kinds of conversations as the church is growing. You know, the church is growing. We're growing. Praise the Lord. Hooray, I think. But it's huge challenges for us to remain connected. How do you do that? How do you find the means to do that in healthy ways so that we're not spending all of our time being tempted to think the worst about what other people think about me? Good one. What else? So next week we're going to show a video that's sort of outlays the Bowen theory. And then we're going to talk about all the unhealthy ways in which we deal with anxiety and try to identify them. Because once you've named them, it's a much easier path to be able to find healthier ways to interact with folks. So, all right. We need to vote in about a minute and a half. So if you could just excuse yourself for the 30 seconds it takes to do whatever you got to do and come back in here, we'll start our congregational meeting at 10:30 on the dot if we can. Okay?